Okay, good afternoon. So today we're going to move on from the world of our single cycle processor to the alluded to multi-cycle processor. We're going to talk in particular about one technique for making processors faster by making them take more cycles to do instructions called pipelining. This is going to be the topic that is probably one of the most important topics in this class, maybe like the top two. Top three. And I'm going to start by giving some very non-processor motivation for the technique we're going to use. And pipelining here, so we're going to do things in multiple cycles, but it's really going to be about doing multiple things at once. So this is parallelism. And it's one of the most important kinds of parallelism in a processor and one of the most invisible kinds. So start off. Motivation. Let's talk about how I do laundry, everyday task. And a nice simple way to do laundry is to, I have two loads to do. I have my whites and my more colored clothes, and I want to start with my washing machine and put my load of whites in the washer, and it takes a while, so I sit back, do something, then washer's finished, then I load it all in the dryer. I wait for a while, then I fold it all, and then, I'm done with my white clothes, and now I need my darker clothes, so I'm going to start that and do the whole process again. Is this how anyone does laundry?
No.
No. So what do you do differently? Yeah. So some people say, okay, we don't need to separate it. We just have one big machine. I don't care if my white shirts somehow become darker over time. Okay. So any other different ideas? Yeah.
When the whites are in the dryer, put the colors in the washer.
Yeah, so the logical thing, the thing that you'll typically do, is that if you have one washer and you're done using the washer, you're going to put the next load in there. That's what most people do. So there's another thing which might happen if you're in a big laundry room. You might have two washers at once. That's a different sort of strategy. But let's talk about the idea of, when we're done with one load, let's start the next one right away. That washer is not being used anymore. And just because I'm still doing something with the load of whites doesn't mean I can't put it in there. And in the same amount of time, looks like I can get, even more laundry done. So this is sort of the basic strategy, is that when we're done using some component, in this case, a washing machine or a dryer, you want to keep using it for the next thing. We want to start the next thing right away. This is called pipelining. We'll have multiple things so-called in the pipe. That while we're still finishing up our load of whites, we have our colored clothes still in the pipeline. We put them in the pipeline right away rather than waiting for everything to go all the way through the process. So this is going to be the central idea. When some component of our processor, like say the instruction memory, is done doing what it's doing, we can start give it the next thing to do. So in the case of the instruction memory, when we finish fetching the first instruction, we can fetch the next instruction we're going to run right away before we finish up all the other work for that instruction, as soon as we know what to give the instruction memory. And the instruction memory is no longer processing our first instruction. So first I'm going to look at, how much does this pipelining technique actually help us? And it's not perfect. So one thing you might notice is that when I rearrange things, so I'm starting a load right away, I added some waste. So, I could, right after I finished up using the washer the first time, I could load the next load right away. No delay. Conceptually, reality, there's some unloading, but which I'm not showing. But then I have this little bit of waste here because my dryer didn't take as long as my washer. And in fact, this picture is pretty unrealistic. But we'll get to that. So we have this wasted time here where I'm spending more time doing each thing. So this time from when I started my load of color to when I finished is longer than it would be if I was only doing one load at a time. And this is something which comes up a lot in pipelining, that we're going to take longer for each individual thing when measured from beginning to end, but we're going to do more stuff in total. So I'm getting three loads done, but each of the loads besides the first one is actually taking a little bit longer. And in reality, this would be a really impressively fast dryer, so probably it looks more like this. You know, I'm wasting a lot of time, and that's not uncommon. This is not the most best solution scenario for pipelining because you have this one blocking component. So our time, our latency, so this is one key term we're going to use, is latency. So latency is the time from when we start something to when it finishes. And our latency here has this extra waste period. So we have our actual work that gets done, plus this time where we need to be waiting for that previous guy to finish up. And you note that this wasn't because of our anything wrong with our process, it's just that things were uneven. So if things were perfectly even, we wouldn't have any wait time, but they aren't. And that's gonna be normal. It's normal for things like washers and dryers, and it's also normal for things like circuits that compute values. Usually you can't make them take exactly the same amount of time, you know, for each different thing you want to do when running an instruction. So here we can look at our latency and we can say, okay, from the start of doing the colors to finished, I have, in this case, 2.1 hours. So my latency for doing a single load is 2.1 hours. And this is about 20 minutes longer than my latency would be if I was doing just one at a time. And when we're talking about pipelining, we're going to care about this latency when the pipeline is full. We're not going to ever talk about what's going to happen in the case where we're starting up, typically. So you notice that in the case where I'm doing this physically, when we're starting up, I can, you know, do the first one a little faster. But when we're talking about latency, we're going to care about what's going to happen when we have lots of stuff to do. This is always what we're talking about in pipeline. And this is particularly good for processors, because in processors, we have lots of instructions to run. Your program is not three instructions. It's like 1,000, at least. Yeah?
Why is it bad if the latency for one instruction is longer, if overall the entire set of instructions that you're executing takes a shorter amount of time?
So the question is, why is it bad that the latency is longer? So that's a good question. And right now, it doesn't seem like we have a good reason to believe it actually is bad. There will be reasons that will come up later when we talk about the limitations of pipelining, about why this extra latency is going to matter. So we can look at this latency, but it's not the thing which actually matters as far as how much work are we getting done. And for a processor, the thing we care about the most is not how long it takes to add two numbers, it's how long it takes to run our program. And our program is probably not just adding two numbers. And if it is, most of the time in our program is probably not spent adding the two numbers. And this is even true with our single cycle processor. So what we care about, is not this. It's not, this loss. This loss isn't going to matter, though we should be aware of it. This inefficiency. It's going to be the throughput. So the throughput is the rate at which we finish work. And the main reason I was talking about latency is that you should not confuse these two things. So the throughput is the long run rate at which we get stuff done. So when you have something like a pipeline, one way you can look at throughput is by looking at the time between finishing individual units of work. So when the pipeline is in full gear and we're getting as much stuff as we can done, how long is it between each time we get something out of it? And this will be the same as how long it is between each time we can put something into it. Because the pipeline has a certain capacity, There's a certain amount of things we can do at once, and we're keeping it full all the time. So these two things are going to be the same. And this is the actual number which matters. So from the perspective of someone who just cares about how much laundry can you get done, I get over a load an hour, which is faster than any individual load can actually be done. But that's sort of the appearance of the amount of work I'm going to get done. We're going to have the same thing for instructions in our processor. Our processor, we're going to have it do more instructions per unit time than the actual amount of time it takes to do any individual instruction. Yes?
Is that one of those things like boot up where like, it takes a little bit longer for something to like start up, but then when it's done?
So the question is this why there's things like boot up where it takes a bit longer for things to get started up? So conceptually, there's a startup penalty, but the one that you can actually observe is not this. So pipelining, when we're going to talk about it in the terms of circuits, is not going to act in the order of hours. It's going to act on the order of nanoseconds. So it's going to be a big speed improvement because it's a big improvement in throughput, the amount of stuff we can get done for a unit time. But we're going to be looking at instructions finishing on the order of nanoseconds apart, which is not something where you're going to, and with latencies of also nanoseconds. So that's not something that you notice directly. So there is this performance penalty. You notice your computer starts up slow. That's a different topic. That's the other thing that's on our list of like probably the two most important topics in this class, which we will cut to later in the course. So we know that it takes 0.83 hours, so 7/8 of an hour to finish each load of laundry. And usually when we talk about throughput, we don't talk about the time between finishes. That's not really a rate. We talk about work per unit time. That's what we care about when we talk about throughput. So if you see something that's throughput, it's going to be expressed in work per unit time, so 1.2 loads an hour. When we talk about latency, we'll talk about an actual amount of time it takes to do one particular thing from start to finish. And as I said before, this is the time that between when we finish is the same as the time between when we start, when things are all working at full gear. And this is the only scenario we care about when we're talking about sort of analyzing pipelining. It's also the only scenario we care about because, if you remember from our single cycle processor, we had to set the interval between clocks, rising edges of the clock, and we set that based on the worst case. And that's still going to be true in our pipeline processor. So we're not going to be able to make this interval any shorter. We're going to have it always set to be the worst thing that it needs to be. So this is the idea of pipelining with our toy example of just getting some physical laundry done. So we had different things which naturally decompose the task. We have this washer we want to use, and then we're done when we switch to the other component, next component. So it's a little less obvious, perhaps, how we divide up circuits this way. In particular, we don't have a clear thing that we can move from one component to the other in circuits. Circuits just take an input and constantly act on it, combinatorial circuits. And the other ones wait for a rising edge of the clock and then do something. So there's a general pattern for making circuits actually act in a pipeline manner, making them get this sort of speed up, where we do get higher throughput. We produce more results per unit time, but we're slower to produce each result. So let's look at an example of that. So here's a simple circuit which multiplies something times 3 by adding twice. So the way this circuit works from a timing perspective is that let's say each of these adders takes 50 picoseconds from the time when we put in an input to when we have a stable output. This is our worst case time for the adder. Maybe the adder sometimes is a little faster, but we need to know about, like, this is the worst case. So we put in, say, the value 7, and then this first adder starts working. It sees the value 7 on its input, its output starts changing, and then after a while, it outputs on this 2 times A wire 14. And since, yeah.
So we only give it one input, right? Or it looks like there's 2 inputs, but how come?
There's 2 inputs, they're both copies of A.
Okay.
So this is multiplying times 3, so we're, yeah, inputting A in lots of places. So then we have 14 on this wire and 7 on this, so that's going to be our final step of multiplying times 3, adding 2 times A to A. And again, this adder here takes about 50 picoseconds in this example from the time when we give it an input to when it produces a stable output with its result. So after 50 more picoseconds, we get the result of 21. So this circuit, in 100 picoseconds, gives us a result. So this gives us 10 results every nanosecond. So we want to try to pipeline this. And in this case, what are we going to do to make this a pipeline circuit, to make this faster? Yeah.
Could you, instead of having A going to all 3, could you have, kind of separate them so that way, that adder has the original A, but then you can change whatever input it is to that first adder? So you can start working on a new process.
Yeah, so one thing we want to do is we want to have the 2 adders be working on different final results. So we want to have one input go into this first adder while another input goes into this other one. And one problem we obviously need to fix for that is that this input here, which is currently wired to A, needs to be different than this input here. So something needs to change to make us let us have 2 different inputs. Yeah.
I was thinking have some sort of clock-type thing that can keep circulating through it, so it looks at what it was before.
So we need something which looks at what it was before. Yeah. So as pointed out, the exact component that we know of that looks at what a value was before is a register. So every time we pipeline something, it's all going to be about adding registers. So that's what we're going to end up doing. So let's first work through how pipeline is going to help us. And then we'll look at how we actually change the circuit to do the pipelining. So here's our original time scale with hypothetically inputting a value essentially every 100 picoseconds. We input a new value every 100 picoseconds, we get a result after about 100 picoseconds for some negligible amount of time. You notice there's a bit of a problem that we need to put the result somewhere. So a natural thing to do would be that there probably would be a register here that I just didn't show. Somewhere to place the result when we're done. And we have a rising edge of the clock after every 100 picoseconds. So we could store the result somewhere and use it. But for now, I'm just showing just what this circuit alone does. So we input a number, and 100 picoseconds later, we get an output. And then at that point, we can input the next number. So we're getting about 10 results every nanosecond. And this is sort of the timeline of how those results are produced. We spend 50 picoseconds computing A plus A, and then 50 picoseconds computing 2A plus A from A plus A and the original value. Now, what we want to do is we want to spend 50 picoseconds for each result. So our timeline is going to be that we input 7, and then before we get the result for 7, we're not even done yet, we input 17. Just like in my laundry, I don't wait for my whites to be done, I just start the next load. That's what we're going to do here. So we're going to input 17 before we have the answer. And as we're inputting 17, the second adder is going to work on 14, and we somehow need a copy of 7 somewhere. And it's going to produce its result of 21, and it produces that result at the same time as we immediately input the following value, the third value we want to input. So, and does this make sense? Any questions? Does this sort of timeline make sense? Yeah.
How can you put in the new input when it has, when the ALU hasn't finished computing it yet?
So how can we put in which new input?
Before we even get the answer 14, you're loading in the next.
So sorry, as we get the answer 14, we're loading in the next value, but it's before we get the real answer 21.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant.
So we get a partial result, which we're going to need to do something with, probably use a register. So we have a partial result done, but we don't have the final answer. But even though we don't have the final answer, that doesn't matter. We still start the next computation once we have that partial result done. This is the general pattern of pipelining. We get some partial results, so we can stash somewhere, and then we start the next thing right away before we're even done with the first thing. Other questions, comments, confusion? Okay, so this is the timeline we want. So anyone notice anything else weird about how I drew this? Yeah. So you think that there should be some delay for registers, and I actually did add it because this is not 100 picoseconds. And that's going to be a general thing we'll see, and we'll talk about why that is a bit later. But we're taking actually a little more time than the computation takes because we need to put the value in, and that's actually going to take a little time. So it's not the case that we got twice the throughput, we got a little less. And that's going to be the general pattern of pipelining, is when we divide things into n parts, we're going to make things almost n times as fast. Okay, so as was mentioned earlier, to actually achieve this, we need to store some value somewhere. So somewhere, this 7 needs to be available at this point in time, after about 70 picoseconds, for the second adder to work on it. So that value needs to be stored somewhere, and the type of component we know which knows how to store values is registers. So the way we're going to make this a pipeline circuit is we're going to add registers. And the general pattern, if you wanted to know how to add registers, is you draw your pipeline circuit. So your pipeline parts are in a row, let's say. And you draw a line separating them. And anything that crosses that line needs a register. So here, my pipeline is split here into two stages. Everything that crosses that line, I put a register there. This is the general pattern for making things pipelined. The reason we need a register is that we want to store the value that we just computed, so in the next cycle we can work on it while having the thing that we got the value from compute a new value. And that's exactly what the register does. It waits until a rising edge of the clock, then starts outputting the value it had before the clock. And that's why it was important that, you know, the register waits for that rising edge. I've also put registers at the beginning and end to explain how the heck are we feeding a value every single 60 picoseconds or so. And the way we do this is by having a register where we put a value in, and when the rising edge of the clock happens, that's when we feed a new value. That's when the register changes its output. So registers do exactly what you want to do as far as feeding this pipeline, as far as providing a value every so many picoseconds, and also as far as letting us use the output, because we can get an output, a rising edge of a clock happens, and the output is stored for us to process for at least a cycle while the next value is computed right away. Yes?
Now, does a stage plus saving into the registers count as one cycle, or is it the stage is one thing and then the register?
So the question is, does a stage plus saving into the registers count as one cycle? And yes, and we'll talk about that in a bit. So our timeline with this is that now that we have these registers, if we look at what values are being output by the registers when, we start by outputting 7, our first input. And after the first rising edge of the clock, the registers change what values they're outputting. So into this first register, the input to our pipeline, we've staged the next thing we want to compute, which in this example is 17. and into this register here, the A at time t plus 1, we copied our 7. Our 7 went from here to here. This was the reason why that final question looked like, sorry, that midterm question looked like it did, because it's important for you to be able to see that. So this value here went into here. So now this second register here is outputting our saved 7, the value that we originally input, so we can use it in the second stage of the pipeline. And this big register here is outputting our intermediate result that we waited to be computed before we input our second value. Yeah?
So it's basically the key to this whole pipeline stuff. It's basically synchronizing all of the steps along the way so that all the inputs sort of come in at the same time to each component.
So the question is, it's basically the key that we want to synchronize when all the inputs come in. So that's very important to making this work, yes. And this is why we have a clock signal, and this is why we're using registers. Yeah, because they do that work of making everything happen in lockstep. Unlike our single cycle processor, we can't just have a circuit and have it take however long it wants. We actually need to control when the next step happens. Yeah, back there.
Why are you time decreasing? Why do you start at t plus 2 and go down to 0?
So the question is, why did I label this as t plus 0? This is t plus 1, and this is t plus 2. So the reason is, let's say I input something at time 0. So I input 7 at time 0. Then when 7 is here, when the result for 7 is here, 21, this will have the input from time 1. This contains a value at, so the result for 7 is here. So at a of t plus 1 contains the input for time 1, so based on 17. So the labels are based on what instruction number that register will be storing something for. So this t plus 0 thing will be storing something that, if it's storing something I input at time 0, then this register here is storing the thing I input at time 2. If this is storing the thing I input at time 1, then this stores the thing I input at time 0, and so on. Yeah?
Is this a little off? Because shouldn't that 34 be a 17 and the 51 be a 34?
Yes. Wait, 34 be a 17?
Yeah, because you input 17.
Yes,
a.
Sorry. Okay, cool. Yes, it should be. I can't add. Yes.
How do we make the value in AT plus 1 down there, that register, like, since the inputs are all coming at the same time, 2 into the adder and 1 into the register, how do we make it wait until like an extra cycle and stay in that register?
So the question is, why does this value wait an extra cycle? So the way this works is that during our first cycle, at this time here, the input here is 7, the input here is 7, the input here is 7, and the input here is 14. So right here, somewhere around here, all the inputs to the T plus 1 registers are set. And the way a register works is, at the rising edge of the clock, they copy their inputs to their outputs and keep that until the next rising edge of the clock. So because this is a register, it just works that way.
Okay.
So it doesn't copy the value immediately, it copies it with a delay. And that's very important for our pipelining to work. If we wanted to copy it immediately, we wouldn't have a register there. Okay, other questions about this? Besides this error, where 1734, I meant. Yeah. Okay, so someone asked, you know, do we have to put in the time for using these registers? And we haven't really talked about registers taking up time. Sort of our model of registers is that there's a rising edge of the clock and the output just changes. And this isn't how registers physically work. They can't actually work instantaneously. So let's zoom in on what happens at this rising edge of the clock in the register. So there's two sources of delay here. So there's one source, which is that the register can't just sample a value at an instantaneous point in time from its input. it actually has some period at which it needs the input not to change in order for it to consistently output the value it just read. So there's some period of time during which the input must not change. If it does, then the register might not output the right value. It might output, you know, some combination of the various inputs that were happening. There's also some time after the rising edge of the clock during which the register's output is changing. And it's not stable yet, so it's not ready for an adder to use it. So there's some time after the output. And the total of this of these two sorts of time is what we'll call the register delay. So this is the cost you have for adding a register. This is time that the register is going to take just to store values and send them out that you can't use to do actual combinatorial logic, that you can't use to do computation. And this is a very important cost in pipelining because we needed to add registers everywhere. We have more registers on the path from start to finish. So our latency includes the time that those registers take, and this also affects how long it is between rising edges of the clock for us to actually complete computations. So when we have a register delay, we can look at, you know, how this affects our pipeline circuit. So each of these registers, let's say they have a 10 picosecond register delay, meaning that this that the total of these two times is 10 picoseconds. So then, getting through this register takes 10 picoseconds, getting through this adder as before takes 50 picoseconds, and getting through these registers here takes 10 picoseconds, and so on. So our latency is actually substantially higher. But if you want to look at throughput, this also affects throughput. So the time between rising edges of the clock is the time to get through one of these registers, do our computation, and have the values ready for the next one. So our total throughput here is one thing every 60 picoseconds. So 50 picoseconds to do the actual computation, and 10 picoseconds to deal with the registers at either end. So I drew this 60 picoseconds including this first register, but I could have drawn it including half of the first and half of the second. It doesn't really matter. We just need that register delay in the cycle. Yes?
Does that mean that when you're like building your clock, you have to know how long this would take to look at one operation?
So the question is, does that mean when you're building your clock, you have to know how long this takes? Yes. So you actually, and it's much more complicated than this because you have things that are more complicated than adders. But yes, this is something which affects how you set the clock cycle time. Yes?
Mm-hmm. But the adder that comes after is 10 picoseconds. So is the output of the register just waiting for the adder to finish to grab the next input?
So the question is the output of the register just waiting to grab the next input? So with this design, so your question is this bottom register, it seems to have its input early. And yes, it does. And that is fine. It is absolutely fine that this register gets its input later, this one gets it earlier. The delay, the amount of time we need to take, is based on the worst case. It's always going to be based on the worst case, what we call the critical path. So it doesn't matter that if we didn't have this adder here, we could take only 10 picoseconds for our cycle. That doesn't actually let us make anything shorter because we still need to wait for this adder. And we're just going to have a value accumulate on this the input to this register, and it's not going to act until the rising edge of the clock, so that's fine. Okay. Other questions? So our throughput here is about 16 operations every nanosecond, or 16 billion operations a second. Not the 20 that we would have expected if there was no register delays. And this is a common thing that's going to happen when you have something really short like an ad and you try to make it pipelined. Is that the penalty of pipelining means that you don't get the doing two things at once means you're twice as fast improvement. Okay, so let's say we wanted to make this have even higher throughput. What are some things we could try doing? So let's say 16 billion multiplying times 3 a second isn't good enough for me. How can I make this faster? Yeah. So one solution is, you know, if I wanted to do more ads, why don't I just make another copy of this? And now I can do twice as many. So that's a perfectly good solution and something we can really do. And something that processors can do. It will turn out to be difficult to do, more difficult to do for our processor instructions for reasons we may or may not get into. So how about if I just want to not increase the number of adders? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You pipeline the actual adder?
So the question, so the suggestion is, could we just pipeline the actual adder? So the conceptual idea is that we want to produce some partial results in the middle of the ad, store those in a register, and now we can do the first half of the ad, which let's say we're really good at pipelining our adder and it takes 25 picoseconds. Store those results in a register and then do the second half of the ad. So we can do parts of 4 ads at the same time. So we don't have any more adder stuff. We just have split our adders into 2 pieces and somehow figured out some intermediate result we can store in between those 2 pieces. So we can work on the first half of the ad, then the second half of the ad, then the first half of the second ad, then the second half of the second ad. And hopefully this means that we can do 4 multiplies times 3 at once. So what's our throughput here? So how do we figure out what the throughput of this is? So as I said, how long would it take before we get another either input or output? So you want to know the interval between inputs or outputs. So what's that going to be here? So people say 35 and 35 picoseconds, and the way is the interval. And the way you figure that out is we're ready for our next input when we've gotten to this. The first set of registers. So we look at how long does it take to get from one set of registers to another, what's the time for that? And it's 10 picoseconds to go through one registers and then 25 picoseconds to get to the next one. And that's true everywhere in this. So it's 35 picoseconds between inputs or between outputs. Yes?
So that time would be the longest time between two registers?
Yes. So yeah, the question is, that's the longest time? Yes. So for now, this is evenly divided. We'll talk about, we'll give examples where it's not later. So we have one every 35 picoseconds. So this is about 28 billion operations a second, which is, you know, not quite twice as fast as it was before. So there are some practical issues with this suggestion. So one question is, you know, I made it almost 4 times faster. How much faster can I actually make this by doing this strategy? Because I conceptually I can just divide this up more, I can have more partial results for my adder. And there's another problem, which is, can I even divide up adders like this? Does this work? Is this practical? So first I'll start off with the how much faster can we get. And register delays are going to give us diminishing returns. So this is sort of an extra cost, which is not real computation, that we pay no matter how small we make the computation for each time we insert a new value. So yes, maybe we can divide up our 100 picoseconds of computation into 1 picosecond pieces. But if we have a 10 picosecond register delay, we're going to be spending, end up eventually, spending most of our time working on having the register read values and output values. So even if we, in the most optimistic situation, where we can split things up perfectly as much as we want, we still have this big loss at the end. Yeah?
Effectively, even probably worse than diminishing returns, isn't there some point where it goes so low that the register delays add up to more than the original time of the process?
So the question isn't there some point in time when the register delays add up to more time than it takes to process originally? So at each step here, we actually are gaining throughput. What we aren't gaining is latency. So the latency of this, so I said it's 11 picoseconds per cycle. So if we have 1 picosecond of work, we're spending 11 picoseconds for each result we get out. But it takes 100 cycles to get a result. So what's our latency? 1100 picoseconds is our latency, which is way, way longer, which is 10 times longer than our original latency, over 10 times longer. So we're paying a huge cost in latency, and when we're going this extreme, that latency is probably going to end up mattering. We can talk about sort of scenarios where it matters for our processor later. But yes, so the latency is what's going to go way up. But the throughput actually is going to be probably better. Yeah?
What's like the best, or is there like an optimal ratio for logic to register delay time?
So the question is there an optimal ratio for logic to register delay time? So not really. So one way of looking at this is, so I've like sort of drawn out the trade-off, and we can just write out, like graph what this looks like. So you can see what's happening here. So that originally we take, with one stage divided up perfectly, we take 110 picoseconds, then 60, and so on. And we get these diminishing returns. We're bounded by this 10 picosecond register delay, so we can't go below 10 picoseconds. And we get closer and closer. And there's not an obviously optimal value because it's this diminishing return shape that probably we want something at what we call the knee of the curve. But there's a lot of places you can argue the knee is. So you're not wrong for saying I want 14 stages, because there is a real improvement from 13 to 14. But no, it's a much smaller improvement than you're getting for the first few stages you add. Register delay. So for example, adding our first stage is a 1.8 times speed up. Adding this last stage is a 2% speed up. So it's faster, probably not worth it. Yeah?
Practically speaking, do most like processor designers go for like the fourth or fifth dot?
So the question is, practically speaking, do most processor designers go for the fourth or fifth dot? So these register delays might not be realistic as far as the ratio of work for doing an instruction. The number of pipeline stages in real processors is surprisingly hard to measure because real processors are more complicated than processors we'll talk about in this class in detail, but is something like 5 to 15, typically, depending on how you measure, sometimes maybe up to like 20. It depends on how you measure. It's, yeah.
Isn't it really expensive to just keep adding registers?
So the question is, isn't it really expensive to keep adding registers everywhere? Yeah. So if you're going up to this extreme, you probably have some problems with how much space your thing takes up, which might be more of an issue than the actual throughput. Yes. So yes, there is some other cost. We need more hardware to add more stages. We are not making things simpler, we're making them faster. But we're making them faster by adding stuff. So another way of looking at this is throughput. And less obviously, so our register delay caps our throughput at 100 per nanosecond, and we get the same sort of increases in throughput. Because throughput is 1 over the time between things finishing, which is what this is graphing. And throughput is usually the number you'll see quoted, how many operations per second your processor does, which usually you guess by the clock cycle. So we had our second problem, which is, can we actually split things up arbitrarily? And the answer is generally no. So, you know, conceptually, I'm dividing this adder in half. I probably can't quite do that. So the way adders work, yes, there's going to be some partial results. I probably can't really make it such that I get the partial results after everything has taken 50 picoseconds. So I might be a little off. So let's say I divide up my 100 picoseconds of adder into a 60 picosecond half of the adder and a 45 picosecond finish the add. That might be something I can do. And I've paid some cost here because this is not split up perfectly. And remember that the longest path is what we have to set our clock cycle for. We need to make this register work correctly. It doesn't matter that this register could finish earlier, we need to still finish this register. And even if we had some funny way of having different length clock cycles for different parts of our circuit, this doesn't help us. Because this register is only going to feed results every, in this case, 70 picoseconds. Doesn't matter if we can run this half of the circuit faster, it's not going to have inputs faster. So we're always limited by the slowest stage. So even a little bit of bias in how we can split things up is going to have a big effect on sort of our diminishing return. So it's going to make it much worse, because if we, you know, are off by like 20%, you know, we already had really small gains, now we're making them even smaller. So in practice, we have our diminishing returns here, but these are smaller because we're not going to divide things up perfectly. We're going to get something like a 60-40 division of 100 picoseconds. But overall, it's still going to be worth it. You know, even in this case with uneven division, we're still making things faster. So yes, 110 down to 70 is not 110 down to 60 picoseconds per cycle, but it's still, you know, like 60% improvement in throughput. Still well worth it. Okay. So any questions about these pipelining trade-offs? Okay, so let's move on to trying to think about how we're going to apply this to our processor. So when we talked about our processor, we had these stages. And these stages were rather confusing. Why were we talking about stages when, in fact, everything happened at once? You know, we learned that the way our registers and register file and data memory work is that the writes actually happened at the end of the cycle. Doesn't matter that I said the memory stage was here. The writes actually happened at the end of the cycle. We set them up conceptually earlier. But these stages were just about splitting up how we build our processor so we can work on one stage at a time. And our reads, well, they happened not, you know, during the decode stage or the memory stage. They happened whenever the inputs were available, because that's how our memories and the other things work. But what we're going to do is we're going to turn these conceptual stages, which didn't say when things happened, into real pipeline stages. So now it's actually going to be in order things happen. And the reason that's going to be is that we're going to have these separated by registers. So those registers are going to synchronize things. They're going to make us wait for one stage to have results before we use them in the next stage. And in order to turn these into pipeline stages, we need to make one minor but very important change. Which is, we're going to take our PC update stage, which our textbook like listed at the end, and we're going to combine it with fetch. The reason why is that we're going to have one instruction in each of these stages, and we want to know what instruction to run next. And we want to know that in time for, you know, after the first stage finishes. We don't want to wait until a later stage finishes. So you might be thinking about this and thinking about, well, what do we do in PC update? And if you think of like RET or JE, you might say, you can't actually do this. And you're right. And we'll get to how we fix that later. Okay. So any questions about this division into stages? So this is what our eventual goal is going to be, is that each of these is going to be a pipeline stage. So we're going to start an fetching an instruction. And when we finish that, we're going to fetch the next instruction while we're decoding the first instruction, and so on. And by doing this, we'll make our processor slightly less than 5 times faster. Slightly less because we're not going to be able to do the exact same amount of work in each of these stages. Like, it might be the case that our memory is slower than our ALU or vice versa. That means that we're going to have an uneven division of work, so we're not going to get 5 times faster. And we're going to have those register delays. So this won't make our processor 5 times faster, but it's going to make it almost 5 times faster, because we're splitting the work up into 5 pieces. But it's only faster as far as what's the time between when we finish each instruction. Remember, we still have a higher latency. So the time from when I start the first instruction to when I finish the first instruction is still going to be, it's going to be longer by doing this. But that's going to be worth it, because when we're running a program, we care about how long does it take to finish thousands of instructions, not one instruction. Okay, so now that we have this division, let's look at pipelining a simple variant of our processor. So here's a picture of a processor that only executes adds. So I've replaced our ALU with just an adder, and I've hardwired the inputs to the register file. I've gotten rid of all these muxes that we had before. I have hardwired the inputs to the PC to just add to the length of an add instruction. I'm not using this memory input at all. We don't have a data memory at all. So this is a processor that just does adds. Any questions about what this processor looks like? Okay, so now that you've seen this processor, one thing we'll do to pipeline is we'll first say, well, where is the work in each stage happening here? So we know from our division into stages how we want to divide this work. So let's just draw over where each of those stages is happening. So we have our fetch and PC update here. We have our decode here. Confusingly, our decode doesn't actually do the splitting, it does the register reading. Then we have our execute, where the add happens, and we have our write back, where the register file is written. The added processor doesn't have a memory stage because there's no memory operations. So we have one little problem here. So whenever we're trying to pipeline something, we want stuff to go from one stage to the next stage. We don't want something which skips a step. So our first thing we're going to do to pipeline this is we're going to say, wait, we have this signal which skips ahead 2 stages. And I'm going to help us pipeline this, I'm going to redraw this so it doesn't do that. So I'm going to draw it so it goes through our decode stage, through our execute stage, and all the way back around. So now we have this property that everything in our processor either happens within a stage or goes from one stage to the next one. There's nothing which goes from one stage to 2 stages ahead, or goes backwards a stage, or anything like that. And this is something we're going to want to pipeline. So once we've drawn things with that property, so we're not skipping ahead, our process is going to be that we're going to add registers between each of the stages. Because remember, we want the stage to do all its work, store it in a register, so it can move on to the next thing, but not lose the values it computed. So we want our fetch stage to do all its work and store the things it got, which are the register numbers from the instruction. And then we want the decode stage to do all its work, store the values it computed, which are the things it read from the register. And then it can start the work of the next add instruction, and so on. So we have these register banks, and this is why in HCLTD you can define multiple registers together with common prefix. This is precisely to enable making registers for pipelining. So we have a set of registers between fetch and decode, a set between decode and execute, and a set between execute and write back. And notice that the value we needed to pass to dest E that the one that we had to redraw it because it skipped a stage originally, that we've drawn to go through each of the stages, because it was something which went from one stage to the other, we put it in a register. It doesn't matter that we weren't doing anything with it, we still need to pass it through a register, so we pass it at the right time. We want to make sure that this destination E is the one which goes with these register values. We don't want it to be one for a different add instruction. So after we add these registers, this is now we have our pipeline processor. That's all we need to do. So this is a pipelined add processor. So assuming that we can measure how long each of these components takes, we can compute how long the clock cycle needs to be. And for this processor, it's going to be, how long does it take to get from the PC to the PC, or the PC to these registers between fetch and decode, or from these registers and fetch and decode to these registers from decode and execute, or these registers between decode and execute and write back, or execute and write back into the register file. We need to measure all those times, and whichever of those is longest is going to be our clock cycle time. So we take our worst case from one thing that stores values and outputs them to something which takes in a value and stores it. So that's how long our clock cycle is going to be. And this is definitely shorter than our original circuit, except in the unlikely event that this add two here is really, really slow. So as long as that's not the case, this is definitely shorter because presumably our worst case path was previously going through the instruction memory and the register file to read and the adder and the register file to write. And now our critical path is probably either reading the instruction memory, reading the registers, or doing the add or doing the register write. It's one of those things, only one of them, is what determines our cycle time, whichever one of those is longest, plus the register delay. Oh, right. And so I've mentioned that we have these registers between pipeline stages. So this set of registers is between fetch and decode. We also have a register between fetch and fetch. This is kind of the weird exception. So this PC register we've talked about is basically communicating from fetch stage at time 0 to fetch stage at time 1. So it's a register between fetch and fetch. And it's our one exception which communicates between two different instructions. All the other register banks I've drawn are communicating for the same instruction between two stages executing the instruction. This PC register is telling, based on the previous instruction, what the next instruction needs to do. Okay, so let's look at how this processor actually executes some instructions. So let's say we have add R8, R9. So initially, we're going to read this instruction. So our PC contains the address of that add, and we get the instruction from the instruction memory, and we split it up into its two pieces. So we have register number 8 and 9 as the inputs to these registers. And when the rising edge of the clock happens, 8 and 9 are going to be stored in those two registers. So in the next cycle, those two registers are outputting 8 and 9, and one of those 9s is going to end up here in this destination E register, and the other ones are going to go into this register file and cause a register read to happen, and we'll get the value from the register file, which will be read into these two registers. So during the second cycle, the input to these register files, so these registers, is the register values and a register number from the first instruction. Meanwhile, at the same time, we're doing the fetch phase of the second instruction. So we're reading that instruction from the instruction memory and getting its two register numbers, 10 and 11, and those are the inputs to this fetch decode register bank. So those are the inputs during our second cycle. So then, during our third cycle, we'll start outputting 10 and 11 here and start the next instruction and so on. So the values are going to move in after each cycle one register bank down. So we can sort of write out a more complete example what the values are. So in our first cycle, we say read PC0, we read 8 and 9. Let's say our registers contain 800, 900, and so on. Make things easy to remember. So we get 800, 900, and 9 into these registers. In the next cycle, we actually compute the values, but we don't store it yet. And in the following cycle, we actually output these values from the execute writeback registers and do the writeback. And while we were doing, say, the execution, these values, we also were reading the registers for R10 and 11, and reading the instruction for R12 and R13. Yeah.
And in touching decode, we would need to still like store a best E, right?
Infection.
Never mind.
Because
DestD is the same thing as RB.
So. Yeah, so DestD is RB. Yeah. So in this case, we didn't need to figure out what DestD needed to be. It just always is RB because it's ads. In our real processor, there might be some muxes somewhere. So, and keep going. And so this is our pipeline processor. This is how we actually, do have multiple things in the pipeline at once. So we have things in these registers from multiple instructions depending on which stage they're for. That's our normal operation. So let's think about how this processor performs. So let's say that these are our delays. Then what's our critical path? So without pipelining, our critical path is just the sum of these together for that we're actually in a path. So it would be going through the instruction memory, then the register file, then the adder, then back to the register file to write. It wouldn't include the add to because that's something we can do in parallel with the rest of the work. With pipelining, we say, well, it's the maximum of going through the instruction memory to this register, which is 200 picoseconds, going through the register file to read, which is 150 picoseconds, going through the adder, which is 100 picoseconds, and going through the register file to write, which is 150 picoseconds. And the maximum one of those is the instruction memory. It happened to be slowest with these timings. So it's that 200 picoseconds plus our register delay. And our latency is actually 800 picoseconds. So here, so originally we were doing one instruction every 600 picoseconds with our single cycle processor. Here we're doing one instruction every 200 picoseconds plus some register delay, but we're actually taking longer for each instruction. Our latency is 800 picoseconds now. So it was definitely worth doing, but we're taking longer to execute each instruction. It's just that we're doing more instructions at a time. So any questions about this? Any reason about our performance? So let's look at some reasons why we'll start to care about latency. So here's a slightly generalized processor. We'll say that we're going to do any ALU op instead of just ads. First step is going to be, let's generalize this a bit. So something that we didn't talk about much was that we need to control what happens in each instruction. We had muxes, and we didn't show you the control signals. But this is a case where those control signals we can't quite ignore. So for example, if we want to do subtracts and XORs, we need to know what kind of instruction it was. So we need to know about the function code. We need to pass that to each pipeline stage. We can't just take it from the instruction memory because that's not the instruction we're currently doing the execute step of. That's the one we're fetching. That's several instructions ahead in the program. So just like we passed dest e all the way through, we're going to do the same thing with our function code. We're going to pass it from the instruction memory, from fetch, to decode, to execute, because we need it in execute. And that means we're going to add something to the pipeline register. And this is the general pattern you'll see, is that when we need something from a prior stage, we better be getting it from a pipeline register. Because if we just wire it from the stage, yeah, you can do that, but it's not for the right instruction. You will get the wrong answer. And this is probably by the most common mistake and one of the hardest to debug mistakes that people make when trying to implement a pipeline processor in this class. Okay, so let's talk about another issue, going back to our simple add processor. So let's say, instead of executing the example I had before, I want to add R8 to R9, and then R9 to R8. Let's look at what happens here. We're going to add, so after our first cycle, we're reading register 8 and 9, so we get 800 and 900. Then we add 800 and 900 and store 1700 here, ready to write it back. And while we're storing 1700, we're adding 900 and 800. Because we haven't written the value yet of the first add. This is a bit of a problem. Yeah. So the question is, does the compiler need to know about this? So the question, that's a question of what the ISA is. So in this case, our pipeline implementation did the steps in this order. It read R8 and R9 for the first instruction, then read it for the second instruction, then wrote R9 for the first instruction, then R8 for the second instruction. And we got the wrong answer because our instruction set specification presumably said that we read R8 and R9 for the first instruction, then write it, then read R9 and R8 for the second instruction, then write it. So we didn't implement the ISA spec. So our processor is wrong if it does this. And this problem is called a data hazard. It's called a data hazard regardless of whether the processor does it. A hazard is something that the pipeline doesn't handle by itself, that we're going to need to do something extra to handle it. The natural pipeline implementation is going to produce the wrong result unless we do extra work. So there is one thing we could do, which is that we could have the compiler do it, as mentioned. And if we do this, we change the ISA. We say that add queues take effect 3 instructions later. We just write that in our instruction specification. That adds don't happen immediately, they happen 3 instructions later. And the compiler needs to know that in order to produce correct code. So this is a real thing that real instruction sets have done. Usually not for adds, but for other instructions. It is usually not considered acceptable. The biggest issue is that if you want to actually change the hardware design so that you have different data hazards, like you divide it up into pipeline stages differently, this makes it annoying to do so without making things inefficient. But yes, this is a real thing that some ISAs have done for dealing with hazards. It's just say, define in the instruction set architecture that some instructions have a delay and when they take effect. But this idea is the simplest way to solve the hazard. It's just insert no operation instructions while we're waiting for the value to be ready. Make sure that the things for instruction 1 happen before by adding no ops before instruction 2. And this is something where one solution is the hardware can add the no ops. So our hardware can somehow detect, oh, this is going to be bad. And it can, instead of running the add instruction, it can run no ops and delay when it actually puts the next instruction into the pipeline. So its fetch stage can just hold the instruction, the PC where it is, not change it, and wait until the values the instruction needs are ready. And this is called stalling. And this is going to need extra logic. So we need some logic in our fetch stage to sometimes add 2 to the PC, and sometimes not. Sometimes leave it unchanged. And extra logic to sometimes pass in the values we read from the instruction, and sometimes pass in some values for no op, some values that don't do anything. So what that looks like if we implement a stall is that we run our add R8, R9, and then our fetch logic, the extra logic we talked about, instead of actually adding 2, it leaves the PC unchanged. And instead of passing in 9 and 8, it passes in some do-nothing values. In this case, our no register register numbers, which writing to that register won't do anything, so it's fine. So here we spend 2 cycles all the way through the pipeline. So 2 cycles worth of work for each stage after the fetch stage doing nothing in order to wait for this value to be written back. Yeah?
Does this mean that if you have like a bunch more stages that we've like split up to make it faster in the throughput, we have to be stalling for a lot more cycles?
So the question is, does this mean if we have more stages, we'd have to be stalling for more cycles? Yes. And this is an example of where latency matters, because the amount of time we're stalling is the latency of doing some part of the work of the instruction. In this case, the latency of everything after the fetch is how long we have to stall. And that's why I mentioned latency. So this is where latency can affect our performance. So if our processor needs to stall, then no, we're going to be stalling based on the latency. So the number of times we need to stall, we take a penalty based on the latency of our processor, not its throughput. And so this is actually safe. So here, by adding 2 cycles of stalling, we write it during cycle 3, and we read it during cycle 4. So we're fine. So this is called a data hazard. It's called a data hazard because there's data we want which is not available. And as you can guess by me calling it a data hazard, there's some other types of hazards we're going to talk about in this class. And one of them is a control hazard. So let's say I add R8 and R9, and I jump if equal. So if you remember, jump if equal is going to look at the 0 flag, and it's going to look for it being equal to 0. And we can't know even what the PC is, because we don't know actually what the value of the 0 flag is going to be based on the previous instruction. And our ISA says that when you do an OPQ instruction, it sets the condition code so you can use them in the next instruction. But in fact, we haven't even done the computation yet by the time we need the answer. So we don't have the flag value set. We've just read the values from the registers. That's all we've done at the time that we need to know what PC to put in the PC to run next. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fixed by the same stalling as?
So yes. So one solution to this, the question is, wouldn't this be fixed by the same stalling? So one solution to this is yes, you can stall.
Wait. So do we stall whenever we do an add, or do we stall only when we have like 2 consecutive?
So the question is, do we stall whenever we do an add, or only when we have 2 consecutive things? So if you want your processor to be fast, you want to stall as little as possible. So it's still correct. It's correct to stall when you don't need to. But if you want your processor to be fast, you're going to avoid stalling except when there's actually a problem.
So do you need to like read ahead in the instructions to like, or like how do you?
So the question is, do we need to read ahead to do this? So when you fetch jump equals, you can look at that instruction and decide, do I want to stall now? So you don't need to read ahead. You look at the instruction you're trying to run and you say, can I start this now? So that's the logic we're going to have. So I note that we talked about hazards today with stalling. This is not, in fact, going to be our dominant solution to hazards, but it's the simplest solution to hazards, which is why I started with it. We're, in fact, going to run most instructions without stalling. We'll talk about how we do that later, though sometimes we'll still need to stall.